Final hour overdrive continues. TSN 1050 online, tsn1050.ca, your home smart speaker, and now up on TSN 2, Brian Hayes and Jonah Siegel of The Athletic. The O-Dog doing some panel work, so he's covering the Leafs and Columbus tonight on TSN 4. Catch up with our buddy Mark Masters in about a half an hour down at the rink and get more of an update on the injuries, on the replacements, some of the kids making their debuts tonight. What he expects out of them with Columbus in town. And we're going to get to our list here in just a moment because there's a couple of reasons why we decided to do this. It is into December, end of the year. A lot of people are doing, you know, different Canadian athlete lists, and the Lou Marsh will come out tomorrow. We're going to have our Lou Brown Awards revealed tomorrow at 5:30. But big news yesterday, Bianca Andreescu announcing she's not going to be at the Aussie Open. And Bianca has been one of the biggest Canadian athletes and draws and compelling stars, really, over the last 3 or 4 years. And now she's not going to be competing at the Aussie Open. And today it was announced Vlade Guerrero Jr. won the Tip O'Neill Award, which is effectively the Canadian Baseball Player of the Year. And as a result, we're like, okay, maybe we should come up with a list, non-hockey players, in terms of the most compelling athletes, the most excitable athletes, who we have our eye on going into 2022. But I will say, before we get to both of our lists, and I haven't seen your list. I don't know if you included Vladdy. I did not include Vladdy in my list.
I did not either.
And I take issue with the idea that he would be up for the Tip O'Neill. Not that it's the end of the world, but this feels like a circumvention of the award and the parameters of the award. And it's my understanding, Vladdy's going to come up tomorrow in the Lou Marsh voting. And yes, he's born in Montreal. He's Canadian. Absolutely, he's a Canadian. But I think if you were to ask Vladdy, he'd be the first one to tell you he identifies as a Dominican athlete. If the World Baseball Classic were happening, he would play for the Dominican Republic. He would not play for Canada. And I look at it the same way I look at William Nylander. Born in Calgary, he's a Swedish athlete. Emma Raducanu just won the U.S. Open. Born in Toronto. Spent the first 2 years of her life in Toronto. Is she going to be up for the Lou Brown or the Lou Marsh or the Tennis Player of the Year? No, she won't be because she's British athlete.
Well,
and I feel like this is circumventing it because he plays for the Jays. Like if Vladdy played in Arizona, would he be up for the Tip O'Neill and would he be up for the Lou Marsh? I don't think he would be.
Can I play devil's advocate?
Sure.
Where was Milos Raonic born?
Well, and that Steve Nash.
Where was Steve Nash born?
He was born in South Africa. Yeah, but that actually proves my point, Jonas.
Does it?
The fact, well, because we consider they came up in our system.
Yeah,
they identify as Canadian athletes. Milos and Steve would say, "I came up as a Canadian tennis player, Canadian basketball player. I represent Canada at the highest level." William Nylander represents Sweden. Vladdy, I think, would represent the Dominican Republic. Emma Raducanu would represent the UK.
Mm-hmm.
So
fair.
Yes, he is Canadian. Of course he is. But I feel like we're why not just
we should just get rid of nations, Hayes, and just like do a global. We're all global citizens. How do you think
well, I disagree with that vehemently. I believe in a sovereign state and our borders and all right. That, Jonas. Let's not get crazy here. But you know, on the flip side of it, Freddie Freeman, who's an American. Both his parents Canadian. He has dual citizenship. He is a Canadian. Has never been up for the Tip O'Neill. So
it's almost
feels
like they're picking and choosing.
Effectively. And I think, again, because Vladdy plays for the Jays as opposed to Arizona or the Cubs or the Marlins or whatever, it feels even more Canadian. But I don't think Vladdy identifies as a Canadian athlete. I think he would say he's a Dominican athlete.
Yeah, if he played for the Yankees, he's probably not winning that award.
No, exactly. So I wouldn't say I'm disappointed because I don't think it's worthy of disappointment. But if he were to be up for the Lou Marsh or win it over Damian Warner or, you know, any of our Olympians that had a great season, Connor McDavid has clearly had an amazing year, Andre DeGrasse, like, I don't think it should happen. I don't think Vladdy should be even in that conversation.
Man, I didn't have some of those people on my list. I should have.
Well, now I got you thinking, Jonas, because there's an honorary
boy.
Mention, man. Let's get to our list. You can start here with all this in consideration with the Bianca Andreescu news, Vladdy, who neither of us have on our list because I don't consider him a Canadian athlete. I know he's born here and Canadian based on birth, but Who do you have? You can start this party off. Your top five non-hockey playing Canadian athletes that you find compelling, intriguing, you're looking ahead to in 2022.
All right.
Go ahead and start the party.
Do you want me to go 5-1? I think that's more
dramatic. Yeah, you
dramatic.
Can do that. Yeah, I think we can pull that off. You want to go 5-1?
All right. Number five, Felix. Huh?
Ogier Aliassime.
I was debating between Felix and Dennis, and like you can kind of flip a coin. Both those guys, I think, are on the rise.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm picking one guy to win the next major, or I guess win the first major for Canadian
on the men's side,
right?
Yep.
He would be my pick. Number
I agree.
Five.
I agree. Okay, I like that.
Number right. four, I don't think you're going to have this guy on your board at all.
Okay.
Andrew Wiggins.
Not only do I have him on my board,
wow!
I have him at number four.
Impressed.
I'll get to my reasoning, but
yes.
You go ahead. You go ahead, Jonas.
I think he's very important to a team that is right now the favorite to win the NBA championship.
I agree with
he
you.
He's maybe their – he's not maybe. I think he's their fourth best player. He's going to guard every great player in the playoffs. I think he's kind of like found his way in Golden State. It's kind of the perfect spot for him. He doesn't have to be the star. He's not really in the spotlight, but he's like kind of weirdly important to them.
He's Phil Kessel is what he is.
Good
he's
comp.
Immensely talented, and he needed to be basically put in a place where he's not the man, he's not the secondary guy, he's not even necessarily the third option, but could be if need be. You look at his stats last night. Look at his numbers last night. What did he go, 8-for-10 from three last night? His outside shot, his numbers are elevated mm-hmm. significantly. When he went to Minnesota, he could have had this story early in his career if LeBron didn't go to Cleveland and then basically say, I want Kevin Love, you got to flip this pick. He was irrelevant in Minnesota because they were so bad. It doesn't help his history here because he hasn't played for the national team.
Mm-hmm.
But when he remember when he went to Kansas and when he was going first overall, he was the most hyped Canadian player in history in terms of youth and knowing of him when he was 14, 15, 16 coming up, and it's taken him a long time. But because he's riding with Steph, because he's on arguably the best team in the league, I agree with you. I have Wiggins at 4-2.
Nice.
So
like
I totally agree with you.
I will stay on the NBA side for number three. SGA is my number three. Now, he's obviously not playing. You had him on your list?
I do not have Shea Gilgeous Alexander.
I think he's the best Canadian playing currently in the league.
I think Jamal Murray, but
he's not
coming off injury. Yes.
Right, he's not playing right now.
Yes.
Now, he plays for a bad team, but he is like their one legit star. Like they're doing the craziest experiment, or one of the crazier experiments we've seen in sports, but like he is their one guy that they're actually for sure keeping.
Yes.
I think.
Unless he eventually goes, get me out of here.
Well, you'd think that would happen eventually. Like if they're just going to be bad for 3 or 4 years, I don't know.
Yeah, he's got to get better and improve. Like to get to an Anthony Davis point where he's like, I'm just not playing for you and you got to get rid of me and I want to go here, there, or wherever. But Shea Gilgeous-Alexander is, you know, kind of on an island right now. Lou Dort, like they got some pieces there for sure. But okay, Shea, you got Shea at number three. Who do you have at number two? These are top five non-hockey playing Canadian athletes, compelling to Jonas Siegel right now.
I got Layla at number two.
Okay, I like it. I like it. So do I.
So obviously, so with Bianca out, we look to Layla kind of now on the female side of tennis. And
absolutely.
I don't know. Like every one of these tournaments now is like gripping because like on both sides of the draw, you've got people who could actually win the you know what I mean?
In a weird way, even though she didn't win it, it feels like she almost had as big of an impact as Bianca did.
Yep.
Like Bianca won, and Bianca won against Serena, which was so significant, and it was the first, and Bianca will always hold the crown because of that.
And it was U.S. Open.
But so was the U.S. It was the U.S. Open with Leila Fernandez as well when she put herself on the map.
And that was so out of nowhere, too.
Exactly. That was the difference. Bianca had won in Toronto. She had won in Indian Wells. Like, the majority of people, myself included, I didn't know who Leila Annie Fernandez was. I had no idea. And immediately captivating. And I'm with you, man. I had her at two as well. And she'll be at the Aussie Open. Bianca won't. I think that's pretty much all you need to know.
I think we'll both have the same number one.
Yes.
Alphonso Davies?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't know very much about soccer, but even I know what's going on with the men's soccer program and the World Cup and everything like that. Mm-hmm. And even I know how special he is.
Yeah. I mean, you can't avoid it. He's, when you start talking about that sport, the amount of people that play it around the world, how elite it is in Europe, all the different leagues, He's on a great team in Bayern Munich. I think his you look at the transfer portal, he's always, I believe he's in the top 15 or 20 in terms of what teams would pay for him compared to other great players in the world. He's special. It's unique. We've never had anyone like him. And you tie that together with the Canadian national team and their success in the pursuit of the 2022 World Cup and him being the face of that, it blows everyone else out of the water. So I'm with you. I've only got a couple differences. Again, we're going through our top five non-hockey playing Canadian athletes that we find compelling, intriguing going into 2022. I had Davies at one. I had Fernandez at two. I had Wiggins at four. But let me get to number five here. I have Joey Votto at five.
Ooh, yeah, he had a big year.
He had a big year, and I've always believed Joey Votto doesn't have a big enough profile in this city. Forget the rest of the country. He's from Toronto.
Yeah.
We've interviewed him multiple times. A great interview. Friend of the show. I'm a little bit biased from that standpoint. He's my age. But this guy, I think when it's all said and done, is going to be considered the greatest Canadian ball player of all time. I think he's probably already passed Larry Walker. He's got 2,000 hits. He's going to the Hall of Fame. His on-base percentage is outrageous. He's always up for the MVP. He's spectacular. He's a spectacular player, and he's doing this at 38. You look at the numbers he's got. How much more do we have of watching Joey Votto, and who's the next great Canadian coming up? You know, like Votto's kind of owned this for the better part of a decade, and I don't want it to disappear. So I'm still holding on to Joey Votto and what he's all about. I have him at number five. I also had Andrew Wiggins at number four. I think he broke it down appropriately. Big team, great team, Steph, and it's coming together. The talent is there. He's shooting the ball very well. He looks athletic. He looks like a stud. You know, Wiggins looks like he's found a very appropriate position to be in, and we'll see what he's got come playoff time. And if he ends up playing for the national team, that will boost it that much more. But Wiggins is finally on the map. It's been a long time coming. Finally on the map. Number three, this is kind of similar to the Joey Votto story where end of the road, great career, kind of want to hold on and see what's left. I have Christine Sinclair at three.
Nice.
Yes, Christine Sinclair at three, who, you know, holds all these records, has been the face of soccer. Like, well, everything we just said about Alphonso Davies, he has taken the crown from Christine Sinclair in terms of being the face of soccer in this country. Like, the fact of the matter is the men's team has not held their weight. The women's team has been so successful for so long. They win the gold medal at the Olympics. Christine Sinclair was the face of that, not necessarily the driving force behind it, but Christine Sinclair is a household name. She's the greatest Canadian soccer player of all time, and she's at the end of the road in terms of her career and what she's going to do, and I'm compelled by where else she might take her career or what else she has left in terms of the national team. And then at two, we both have Leyla Fernandez, and at one, I've got Alphonso Davies because, you know, Davies is on a different path, and I think it's a different – it's a sport where it's clearly – everyone concedes it's the biggest sport around the world, most popular sport around the world, and it's a playground where we haven't been invited and we haven't been included. Like, Canada just has not been there. And if it coincides with this guy's superstardom blowing up with the national team finally making some noise and maybe finally making it to the World Cup on merit, not just waiting for 2026 and punching a ticket because of a hosting scenario, I can't even imagine what this guy's going to represent.
Well, can you imagine what it'll be like if the World Cup comes around and Canada's in it? Like, what it'll be like around the country? Like, I don't know. We haven't really had
I don't know either. It'll be uncharted territory, right?
Yeah.
Like, and I think you'll get a lot of Canadians that will be somewhat confused in terms of who you're supposed to root for.
Yeah, it's like your family heritage. Do you root for that? Do you root for Canada? What do you do?
I'm not
sure.
Root
for both.
I root for both. Yeah. I mean, I'll be rooting for Canada because I just don't – I don't have enough of a connection to, you know, my heritage, I guess, and – for me, I'll be nose to the grindstone with the Canadians. But I understand if you're always supporting a different nation based on your heritage and your history, how that would certainly be conflicting. So I didn't have any Olympians. You didn't either because it's not an Olympic year. It's just the summer games.
I don't know anything.
Yeah, but like Andre
DeGrasse
is a guy.
That's
you know DeGrasse. Yeah, exactly. But DeGrasse, you know, there's going to be the world championships and all that. But he just took over. I'm not thinking 2022 is the year of Andre DeGrasse.
Yeah, fair.
Damian Warner, the same thing, wins the decathlon. I think that is the guy who should win the Canadian Athlete of the Year. If I had a pick, it would be Damian Warner for sure. It might be unanimous on my end, or I would expect it should be, and I kind of think he'll win the Lou Marsh. I think he absolutely should. But, Yeah, with it, you know, it's the winter games, but I don't know enough outside of the hockey on the men and women's side to really know who I should be focusing on there. So
that's the power of the Olympics. We learn those stories there, kind of.
2 weeks before, the 2 weeks during, and maybe 2 weeks after. It's about a six-week window for Olympic attention and exposure.
Who are you most looking forward to seeing playing for Canada, assuming they go the hockey team, men's side? Just McDavid, obviously?
Yeah. What I would like to see is McDavid and McKinnon on the same line.
Oh, man.
That's what I'm hoping for. I don't know if that will happen. But
you saw, I'm sure, Chris Johnson's projection of Crosby playing with McDavid. I thought that was pretty spicy.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. I mean, I think there's been this belief that it would be Crosby, Bergeron, Marchand because it's been successful, but that was 5 years ago.
Yeah, different points.
They're older now.
Bergeron's career.
Yeah, exactly. Like, is Bergeron going to be that far up the lineup? Like, Marchand is a guy who's up the lineup. For me on the left side, if you're going Crosby on the left side, you're going to go Crosby, Huberto, Marchand. That's your 1-2-3 down the left.
Mm-hmm.
In whichever order you choose. If you're doing that, that means you're playing McKinnon up the middle of the ice, which I would agree with as well. Like, maybe that's what you're thinking is, do you want Sid? If you feel like you want McDavid and McKinnon up the middle of the ice, that means Sid's going to be your third centerman. Is that getting the most out of him? You know, maybe it's not.
No, I think if he's your number one left winger and he plays with McDavid, and then who's on the right side of that line for you?
That's the question. I don't.
Marner?
Could be
Point?
Mitch Marner. It could be Point. It would. I would think some combination of Marner, Point, Stamkos having a great year, Scheifele,
sure.
Mark Stone.
I don't know that that's a right fit for him.
I don't know if it is either because of his skating. But Stone is such a good player and smart player and high IQ that. You know, and Mitch Marner's not a blazer either. Like, if you're expecting a guy on the right side to keep up,
yeah, I think
who's going to do that
fits
for you?
There, but let me ask you a question. I don't know if we have time to ask this.
Yeah, go ahead.
From like everything I'm reading about the Olympic team, it feels to me like they're overthinking this a little bit. And in terms of like, I mean, Chris had Tom Wilson as an option, and I'm thinking like, man, like Canada has some really, really, really high skill, high end players, and like it's like. Even Zach Hyman, like, great player. But should he be ahead of, like, Superstar A? I don't know.
I don't think so if Superstar A is playing up to his capabilities.
Okay. Oh, well, so Superstar A, let's say, is John Tavares.
I would have Tavares on the team.
Okay.
Ahead of a Hyman or a Mangiapane or Tom Wilson.
Okay.
Yes, I would. Because I think Tavares has played himself into that role, into a... You know exactly what you're getting out of John.
Mm-hmm.
You could play. It doesn't even mean that he's going to play. Maybe he's your 13th forward. But if that's your 13th forward, guy who can play up the middle of the ice, guy who's defensively sound, it's an NHL-size rink, so you're not as worried about the pace
mm-hmm.
because clearly he can keep up. You know exactly what you're getting out of John Tavares. I would take him over Tom Wilson or Zach Hyman. The thing is with Canada – they have such an embarrassment of riches. You can have a player or two like that who are still really good players.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it changes the gold or bust expectation. Like, I don't think it drags them down to the pack. Like, if Hyman's on the team, Hyman's just going to go play like Zach Hyman. You're like, okay, that'll work.
Yes. It just feels like you're overthinking a little bit. Just take the best players. Like, don't.
Yes.
Stop
yes.
worrying about, like, this guy plays this role for his team in the NHL. Like, who? I don't know. Like, looking. In Sochi and in Vancouver, like they just took the best players generally. Like they did take some guys kind of like that. Brandon
like Kunitz
Morrow,
is an example. Like
Kunitz yeah.
is the modern day Kunitz would be Hyman, right?
Yes. Well, and then didn't he not eventually play with Crosby? Like wasn't he brought over to play with Crosby and then he eventually didn't play with Crosby?
I feel like eventually, though, didn't they get reunited? Because Kunitz, I think, had a pretty good tournament. If I can recall correctly, I think he scored in the gold medal game.
Okay. I don't remember.
I think they won. I think they beat Sweden 3-0. I think he had a goal that night. But, yeah, I mean, that's the question, though. That's a perfect example, Jonas. If you get over there, and using Hyman as an example, let's say you get two games in and you're like, okay, we're taking him off McDavid's line, then your whole plan gets thrown out.
Yes.
Because now you're like, okay, what are we – the thing is, Zach Hyman can kill penalties as well as anybody. If you
yeah.
put him on a fourth line as an energy guy, I don't think it would hurt Canada, but I don't think it's necessary. I don't think you need that as an ingredient to win.
I would just bring the best players. Like, it seems pretty simple. Like, you can have an injury and suddenly you need Tavares to play on your top line.
But even that, though, Jonas, is subjective in terms of who are the best players. Like, who? How do you define?
I don't know. But we're talking, like, Chris had, like, Wilson and, like, Hyman. Like, those guys are not better players than Tavares or Stamkos.
Yes,
whoever.
I agree with you. I agree. But, like, I think the number one analytics, eye test, intangibles, the question's going to revolve around Dougie Hamilton. Dougie Hamilton's
great
coming
one.
Up.
Yeah.
And there is a portion of the hockey world that thinks it's absurd to suggest not only is he playing, but he's a big part of your team.
Yeah.
And there's another that says, I don't trust Dougie Hamilton. I don't think he shows up in the biggest games. I don't know if he's strong enough, tough enough on the puck, et cetera, to put him in that spot. So I don't know if he's going to make the team.
Is he on your team?
I would probably bring him over, but I wouldn't. It would be like PK in 14. I don't know if I'd play him.
Okay.
Like, on the right side, you got Petrangelo's clearly playing, Cale Makar's playing.
Mm-hmm.
If Drew Doughty's healthy, I would play Doughty. I would play Doughty over Hamilton. So then Hamilton's your fourth pairing guy, so to speak. You know, I'd have to have the list in front of me in terms of who else is in competition, but I think you could find a spot for Dougie Hamilton for sure. But I'm not convinced he's going to make the team is the point I'm making, where I think some would say if it's the best players, period, Hamilton would probably be one of the eight defensemen to come over.
Yeah, he's a tough one. He's kind of emblematic, or not. He kind of symbolizes that debate in some ways.
Yeah. Now, in terms of, you know, the high-end guys compared to, like, where do you stand on Anthony Cirelli being on the team?
See, he's a great example. I kind of like the idea of him being on the team, but that goes against my very argument, so I have to go against it now. Because I get it, like, especially with the coach being John Cooper, who knows him as well as anyone, I could see him kind of playing like a fourth line kind of role, good energy.
Yeah.
He could potentially move up in the lineup if you had an injury. He could play the wing. You know what I mean? I get that. The one question that I think is also interesting is, like, who's going to play goal?
Well, that is one that they don't want to deal with right now.
I don't even know who the favorite is.
I would say it's probably still Carey Price. And Price isn't even skating with his own team.
He hasn't played.
Yeah, and he's not going to play until the new year.
That seems...
So what's he going to get, 10 starts before you go over tops?
Yeah, but I guess if he gets that, you
I think they're taking him. Yeah, if he convinces them that he's in the right state of mind and physically he's feeling good, then I think they'll take Price. And they'll determine over there whether or not he's going to be the guy to play. But I think they'll give him a game,
so
see how he feels.
Who's number two? Fleury?
Probably Fleury.
And then Hart?
I don't know if it's Hart.
Binnington?
I'd go Binnington, personally. Yeah, I would go Binnington. But it gets dicey after the first two. But that's probably – if Price is healthy and can go and wants to go, I'm bringing Price, Fleury, and Binnington and figure it out when you get over there. But it's not
ideal.
That's
a humongous question mark.
It's not ideal at all. Yeah, it's definitely not. Mark Masters will join us from the rink ahead of the game tonight. Leafs Columbus on TSN 4. Get his take on the injuries. We're still waiting on Jason Spezza. I mean, the puck drops in like an hour, and I haven't seen anything come down in terms of what's happening with him. And we'll update our poll as well. The O-Dog not happy about certain events earlier this afternoon where he went to the mystery pick. The mystery pick was revealed, and the mystery pick took the Buffalo Bills last night. Al's brother was on the Patriots, but O-Dog sandbagged him. So we'll update you on whether or not this should be admissible or should it be thrown out, because Carlo Koliakova was the mystery picker and clearly biased because he loves the Buffalo Bills. So more on that still to come. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, we have a pair of Leaf tickets to give away this week. Leafs taking on St. Louis Thursday, December 23rd, every day this week. We will provide the clue to the identity of a current or ex-Maple Leaf player, and on Friday you'll have a chance to call and name that Leaf. Today's clue, this Maple Leaf has over 2,000 career penalty minutes. This Maple Leaf has over 2,000 career penalty minutes. It's a lot.
That's a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Mm-hmm. Got to be like someone from the 80s, maybe?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. You know, I'm trying to remember. I don't even remember what the clue was yesterday, so that kind of throws me off a little bit. Domi, how many did Domi have? Domi had over 3,000.
A lot.
Yeah, believe so. Like, sometimes those videos just pop up on YouTube, like algorithms and stuff, because I'll watch, like, old crazy videos of the NHL in the 70s or 80s and 90s, and the amount of Domi fights, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
Like, he fought Rob Ray, like, 9 times in the NHL. And Probert multiple times, and
You see, like, some of these guys, hockey DBs, and you see, like, hundreds for a year in penalty minutes, and now it's like, who would even come close to that now?
Oh, no one's ever going to catch that. Like, it's, I think the Gretzky records are more attainable than the Ty Domi ones.
Like, ooh, that's interesting.
I think there's a better chance someone in the NHL scores 50 goals in 38 games or has 216 points, then someone catches Ty Domi for most career fights.
Which of those do you think is more likely, the points record or the goals? Not the 92 goals, because that's never happening.
Yeah, like, he's got the 50 and 39, 92 goals in a season. I believe his record is 215 points in a season. I'm yeah. pretty sure it's 215.
That's, no one's catching
see,
that.
I don't see any, I'll say 50 and 38.
I could see that. Like, I could see Matthews. I could see Draisaitl. Maybe McDavid.
It's just got to be miracles, though, man. Like, it's, I can't see it. When was the last time someone scored 50 and 50?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, Matthews scored 41 and 52 last year, and that's not even close.
Not even close.
Yeah.
Yet 92 is not happening.
Never.
Like, no one scoring.
Unless
92.
They, like, change the nets and, like, do crazy things.
Like, maybe if they go to 4-on-4 or 3-on-3. I guess you can never say never.
Yeah.
You know, who knows where we're at in 100 years or whatever. But in the next 20 to 30 years, based on the rules, based on, you know, the current talent level of players, the style of play, because goaltending's not going to go backwards.
Like, yeah, but these, like, how much more skilled can some of these guys get? Like, I'm just looking up what Draisaitl is on pace for this year. He is on pace for 153 points. So he's, like, way shy.
Not even close.
And he's having, like, an insane year.
Yeah. And McDavid's still going to get there. But even McDavid, like, he's got this reputation as a guy who's put up 150 points in a season, 160. He's never done it. And until he does it, he's still, forget Gretzky. He's chasing Lemieux. He's chasing Yzerman.
Well, what did
Bernie Nichols?
What did Timo Solani get that 1 year? 72 goals?
76. He and McGillney the same year.
Do you think 70 something is possible? Like, right now, Draisaitl is on pace for 75, and obviously,
I
that's
think
not
it
happen,
is
but
possible at some point. I think 70. Again, I don't know when the last time someone scored 70 though.
Well, probably Stamkos was the last guy to get to 60.
60, but not like Ovi's never hit 70. I'm guessing the last guy would have been Brett Hall.
Yes.
Didn't Hall have 86 in, like, the early 90s?
Yes.
I mean, maybe Nichols had 72 1 year. That was, like, in 1990 or something.
Maybe if Mike Johnson gets his wish and they actually start calling all the penalties,
but
there's
even
just a
that,
million
Jonas,
power plays and guys score more.
The thing is, the goalies are too good. Like, that, I just don't think it's going to happen unless they increase the size of the nets and at the same time decrease the size of equipment. I don't see it happening. If the nets stay the same size and the equipment for goalies are about the same, because the goalie position has improved more than any other position in pro sports over the last 30 years, and there's nothing that's even close. Nothing
really?
That's close.
Quarterback in the NFL?
Not even close. You're telling me 30 years ago John Elway wasn't comparable to Patrick Mahomes?
I don't know.
You
but
give
let me
the
you
best goalie of 1984 and compare him to the worst goalie today in terms of athletic ability,
fair,
movement. It's not even close. Where you can't tell me the best, you know, Dan Marino in 1984 is worse than, you know, whoever the worst quarterback in the league is right now.
But these, the next wave, they're better athletes. The technology's going to get better. I mean, what's the next Austin Matthews look like? The next version?
I'm not sure how much better it can get. I mean, you got to be realistic.
I don't know. Like, yeah.
Like we've been waiting for the next Bobby Orr for how long? It's probably just not going to happen. And it's the same thing with Gretzky. like those stats, I don't think I again, if I had to guess, I would say 39-50 is the one that is most realistic, but I don't think that's going to happen. And then to lower the bar to your question of could you see someone scoring 70, I think that's realistic, but it's like, I don't know, 5% chance that happens in the next 20 years?
I think CJ actually posted this. Matthews has 58 goals in his last 82 games, something like that.
But even that, Jonas, that's still 12 short.
12 short.
12.
And last year, it felt like he scored every single game.
Right.
I don't know. Let's ask Masters.
All right, here's our TSN Maple Leaf reporter down at Scotiabank, Mark Masters. Mark, we're just having a conversation about records, and we brought up Gretzky and his records, and Jonas brought up the idea, like, scoring 92 in a season just is not even plausible. It's not going to ever happen again. But what about 70? Do you think 70 in a season from any player, let's say it's Austin Matthews in particular, is that realistic, or is that just crazy talk?
I think it's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. I mean, you got to be healthy. Everything has to go your way. It feels like 60 is the thing that you would think would be the new 70 or whatever. I mean, that's at least a plausible target, I think. But 70, oh my goodness. That would be an incredible season. You'd have to have every single thing go your way. I guess Matthews could do it. I mean, we see that he gets into a zone like this, scores in six straight games, and it's already the longest streak in the NHL this year. Maybe he keeps it going, but I don't know. It feels like a lot.
Yeah, 70 sure. Does feel like even maybe 60 is the question. I don't know.
I mean, last year he was on a 65 goal pace, so even
pace,
that
though,
short
Jonas.
Pace. But like, there's every chance he just has one year where he shoots 20% or 25%. No.
Yeah.
Like his shooting percentages are never above 20. They're always high, but they're never crazy.
You need bunches, right? Like, he had that hat trick the other night. That felt like a rarity. It is a rarity.
He's
not a guy that scores.
I think it's four.
Yeah. You know, like, he had four in his first game, and then beyond that, it's usually just tucks in one and, you know, or maybe two, but he's not a guy that's going to have a lot of 3-4 goal nights. And that's kind of what you got to have in one of these magical seasons. You just got to have like 3 or 4 hat tricks, 7 or 8 empty net goals, and shooting percentage through the roof. And then maybe you get a shot. But
I think it's possible.
Okay, we'll see. What's the mood like down there, Mark? A lot of injuries. We're still waiting on Jason Spezza and the suspension news. Why has that not come down? Any understanding of what the Leafs are expecting at this point?
Clearly, Jason Spezza has put on a tremendous case.
Yeah.
I don't know. We were all waiting for it. I was hoping to have it for my interview with Sheldon Keith to get his reaction, but that didn't come through. He's not on the ice for warm-ups, so I mean, everyone's anticipating he's obviously going to get something here. I can't tell you. I don't know why we haven't gotten that. What was the report? 1 p.m. was when the hearing happened. And maybe it's a tricky one. They obviously want to throw the book at him based on how it played out. It'd be predatory, and they don't like they really don't like that play, as you can imagine why. It's revenge-based. But at the same time, this is a guy who's 38 years old, played more than 1,200 games, and hasn't had a whiff of problems. So, and that's what Sheldon Keefe said. He didn't want to talk about it today, but he said, the one thing I'll say about this as the hearing's going to happen is this is a guy who's got a pretty sterling reputation in the league, and I'd hope they take that into account. So perhaps they're struggling with that, and they're debating how long this is actually going to be. But in terms of just the general mood here, I think, you know, that is obviously a tough pill to swallow, especially with the Mitch Marner news being worse than expected, and now Travis Dermott is suddenly out. But, you know, I just watched Christian Thrubens and Alex Steeves come out for a joint solo rookie lap, whatever you want to call it. So that has certainly injected some energy into the proceedings here tonight for the Leafs.
Well, you guys can refresh my memory. Did Pionk get a penalty on the knee with Sandin? I don't think
he
did, right?
No.
Wouldn't that be part of your case if you're Spezza or no?
I don't know about that. I mean, that's a case against the officiating.
Like if you had handled this.
Yeah, but
right,
that doesn't.
Listen,
I know that doesn't excuse it. Bad case. All right.
Yeah.
Dubois-Matthews is the play that started everything, according to the Leafs. And I think that makes sense, because if that is a Leafs power play after that altercation, then there's a good chance Sandin and Pionk aren't in that situation at all. And then, of course, that doesn't lead to Spezza, doesn't lead to Simmons, doesn't lead to all the nonsense. So they really feel like, you know, and that led to Keefe's comment today about, you know, it's surprising Matthews doesn't – strain is the word Keith said, that Austin Matthews doesn't draw more penalties this season. I think it's just one in five-on-five play this season for Austin Matthews, which is – it is strange, I would agree with Sheldon Keith, but they really believe that that Dubois-Matthews altercation situation, whatever, he mugged Matthews and they both went, was really the first domino to fall, and everything kind of got set off from there.
With Mark Masters, our TSN Maple Leaf reporter, live from Scotiabank, Leafs Columbus on TSN 4 tonight. What can you tell us about these kids you just referenced? Ruben's playing defense and Steve's playing forward tonight. What are the expectations with these two kids?
Yeah, well, I asked Willie Nylander about Christian Ruben's today, and he said he's a big, big boy, and he's heavy in the corners. I know that from training camp. 6'5", 220 pounds. He's earned a lot of respect, in the words of Sheldon Keefe, with how he's handled himself. This is a guy who... he was in the ECHL in the 2018-19 season. Worked his way up slowly and surely. Really impressed them in training camp. He's already been called up once this season. So clearly he had earned some goodwill there. And, you know, defensively responsible, they feel like. If he had a bit better in terms of the offensive touches, he might have been up here sooner. But they believe he's truly earned this call-up. So that's him. He's a big guy. Steve's is a guy that I remember. Remember Kyle Dubas did a middle-of-the-offseason summer media availability, and I asked him like which Marley's guys could challenge, and he identified Steve's immediately as someone who they liked what they were getting in terms of the summer report.
So to be fair, Mark, he named everyone.
No,
yes.
Yeah, but these are, you know, and he named Rubens as well, and SDA. So yeah, I mean, but you know, Steve was relatively new. Like he hadn't even played a game for the Marlies yet. So fresh out of Notre Dame, 12 points in 12 games. He missed training camp with a shoulder injury sustained at the rookie tournament. But 12 points in 12 games, 7 goals. I think a lot of people would look at him and Josh Hosang as the most attractive guys. Hosang would need a NHL contract. So there's complicating factors there. But Steve's, they feel like they're really high on. They're giving him a look. He seems to have deserved it based on his AHL success. So obviously easing him in on the fourth line. But also, you know, Keefe said he's going to mix in a lot of different wingers with Austin Matthews tonight. So who knows if we see him, if things are going well, he's feeling it, maybe he gets a look there at some point, but it looks like they're going to ease him in on the fourth line.
Well, Mark, that leads me to my next question. One of our confirm or deny questions was about William Nylander, and the guys both think he's going to play significantly more. I don't. Where do you stand?
That's interesting. Now, I think it's probably not going to, you know, he might play a little more just because he's probably going to get some of those extra shifts with Matthews, right? I don't think he'll play significantly more just because at home, Sheldon Keefe's probably going to lean pretty heavy on that David Camp line. Maybe the fourth line gets really shut down, doesn't play a lot. Steve's, of course, is an unknown quantity at this level. Kyle Clifford, if it doesn't turn into one of those games, you know, Pierre Engvall can be hit and miss in Sheldon Keefe's side. So I could see maybe Keefe gets a lot if that fourth line gets kind of lost. But otherwise, I don't see a huge change in terms of the ice time just because of Marner being out. Maybe a few shifts here and there. But I don't think that he's going to lean, you know, you never know. If Nylander's hopping and jumping, maybe, but it feels like he's got a recipe at home for these games. He likes to lean on that David Camp, Andre Kasha duo.
Enjoy it down there, Mark. We'll do it again soon. Thank you, buddy.
Will do. Anytime.
There's Mark Masters, our TSN Maple Leaf reporter, live from Scotiabank. Yeah, I think it's as I said earlier, it's a double-sided coin. It's when it comes to Nylander, it's not only Marner who's out. Spez is going to be out as well. So,
but he's not playing.
No, Spez is not even there. He's not even warming up.
No, but I mean, like, Spez plays 10 minutes, 11 minutes a night.
No, I understand that. But what I'm saying is the right side has been decimated here. Mm-hmm. Like, you got two of your four down the right side. And Kasha, I think they're going to be a little bit careful with, just based on his injury past. I don't think Kasha is going to pick up 3 or 4 minutes a night. But he's been a huge find for them. Like, Kasha was a really quality signing based on the production through 25 games. Michael Bunting, you know, Richie's the one that hasn't really carried his weight. But Kampf, Kasha, and Bunting have been, that's 3 for 3 right there. All in the cheap, and they've all performed exactly the way the Leafs want them to.
Well, and that's what they need. Like, for this to work with how much they're paying the big guys, like, you need to be able to find bargains.
Yeah.
And it's hard. Like, that's what's difficult about the way that they've gone about this is you kind of set yourself up for very difficult work. Most of the time, like, if you're just paying guys minimum or just above minimum, like, you're not going to get much. You know what I mean? Like, that you kind of have to get lucky. And obviously, Bunting was a unique situation. Kasha had the injury questions. Kampf was playing in Chicago. Obviously, they had their struggles. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it kind of worked out great. Kasha wasn't qualified, I don't think. Kampf wasn't
Boston,
qualified.
Yeah. Yep.
Richie wasn't qualified. Obviously, that's a different one, but...
No, and I believe Richie's the only one they gave. No, they signed Kampf to a 2-year deal.
Yeah, Bunting to 2 years.
And Bunting to two
Kasha
years.
Kasha is the 1 year.
Kasha was a 1-year deal. Although he's an RFA after this, looking at cap friendly, which would, again, they control his rights. What that means for arbitration and all that, he's making 1.25 right now, but there might be a future here for him if he stays healthy. You know, but that's the part of it where you really need to be disciplined as well. Or if you bring in these guys on the cheap and they perform, they exceed your expectations, you can't get crazy and be like, all right, we need you now. You know, here's a 3-year deal at 3.5. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, that was the guy from 2 years ago.
Yeah.
He's back. Like, it's really got to be a catch and release. Like, just a lot of turnover. And you got to rely on your scouting. You got to rely on other teams just not, you know, seeing what you see, and you find diamonds in the rough. And ideally what you have is a system of kids coming in on the cheap, but the Leafs don't really have that luxury either, because, you know, they've got some really good prospects over in Europe, like young guys, but guys that are not prepared to play right now. So we'll see. Leafs Columbus tonight. We'll come back, tee that up, look back again on a crazy night in Buffalo last night. The Raptors back in action tomorrow. Jonas Siegel from The Athletic in here. I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, Leafs Columbus tonight. The Buffalo Bills, man, they are trying to figure out what they're made of now. They're 7-5. They're down in Tampa taking on Tom Brady and the Bucks next week. And I don't know what else you say about Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. We had this conversation earlier, Jonas, where I think if the awards were handed out tonight, Belichick would win the Coach of the Year, likely unanimously, and I think Tom Brady would win the MVP. They've just dominated the league for 20 years.
It's good timing, and I don't know this person, but you should read that book about the Patriots. It's all about Brady and Belichick, basically. Mm. And what one of the things you come away with is, A, the cheating stuff was probably worse than it seemed, and maybe not as bad as it seemed at the same time. And the other thing is, like, Bill Belichick is just an insanely crazy and, like, better coach maybe than you even thought. Like, he's thinking about, like, the egos and the mindset of some of the other coaches, like Mike Martz in the Super Bowl. Like, just, and you can even see in that game last night, like, he clearly went into that game and said, we can't throw the ball because of the wind. We're just going to run it down their throat. And, like, they knew the run was coming over and over and over and over and over again, and still they couldn't stop the run.
Couldn't stop the run, and he knew that they couldn't help themselves on the Buffalo side of things because the run game isn't as strong, that Josh Allen was going to have to throw the ball.
Right.
Also, so he's like, this guy's going to throw. McDermott is going to do it. So he knew exactly what McDermott was thinking, what McDermott was going to bring to the table, what he wanted out of every single individual on that field.
Yeah.
And even Mac Jones, like Peyton Manning was saying during the Manning cast last night, the New England Patriots wouldn't let him speak with Mac Jones before the game. The only quarterback that he has been declined all season. That's Peyton Manning. Imagine thinking it wouldn't be a good idea for your rookie quarterback to speak with one of the 4 or 5 greatest players of all time. But no, because don't want him in my head. Don't want Mac Jones revealing something he's not supposed to. Bill Belichick, man, he rules with an iron fist. But when you're 9-4 and you go to all those Super Bowls and you win Super Bowls, I guess it's something you're willing to put up with.
And he loves Peyton Manning. That's the other thing that you'll learn in the book.
Yeah, Belichick does, because he understands how smart he is.
Yeah.
Right? And how competitive he is and how he thinks the game. It's remarkable. And the Bills, they have to be feeling like it's deja vu, man. They thought it was finally over. When Brady left, it was finally over. And clearly it's not. All right, Jonas. Great stuff, buddy, as always. Thank you for doing this.
It was fun.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Share your almonds.
Yes.
Be kind.
That's your rule. Be kind, share your chocolate almonds. Or yeah. The O-Dog will go in and grab them anyway. The Lou Brown Awards tomorrow at 5:30. Noodles will be back. The O-Dog will be back as well. We are out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy your games. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m. We'll chat then.